managed somehow.
One of the wonderful things of speaking on a topic in a series is you can go deeper and deeper and deeper into the topic. And one of the drawbacks of a series is there's some new people that haven't been there for the first parts. But that's okay. I'll just make a really short summary of the parts that you missed for those of you that are here for chapter 2. We spent some time last Monday, a week ago, Monday, discussing the life of Haridas Thakur. The life of Haridas Thakur is important because when you're hearing from a person, it's etiquette, it's culture, plus it's more than that, there's a spiritual foundation for appreciating the person that you're going to hear from that helps to open the heart. So we heard last Monday about the life of Haridas Thakur, and we went on for about 2 hours. We kind of went over time. Because his life is so glorious. Haridas Thakur is the person who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu identified as the acharya for the chanting of the holy name. Lord Chaitanya came to deliver the holy name, and he selected Haridas Thakur to be the principal person who taught by his example both the conduct of one who chants the holy name constantly and the message. We're hearing his message. So we started Friday. The first chapter was the glories of the holy name. And again, similar principle. Before we begin chanting of the holy name, it's very helpful to hear the glories of the holy name. For a similar reason, it helps us open our heart. Or say it differently. If we understand how valuable it is to receive the holy name, then it helps us to receive the holy name. If someone gives you something for free, you may value it less than if you have to sacrifice something to receive that something. And even if it's given for free, if you understand its glories of that gift, then you'll value it more. I'll tell a little Prabhupada story. Consistently, our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada taught that a qualified speaker of Krishna's message, or the one who delivers the holy name of Krishna, doesn't require money from people to receive, to give them teachings or give them the name. Because during his time, there was a popular person who was selling mantras, $35 a mantra. And he was popular. And Prabhupada said, gurus don't do that, they don't sell mantras. And same, you don't sell teachings. So we heard this consistently. Then I had this occasion of being in Prabhupada's quarters once when the temple president was Sri Govinda, who was the temple president of Chicago, had come to invite Srila Prabhupada to for two things. Well, I'll just mention one thing. He came to invite Srila Prabhupada to come and speak at a public gathering in an outdoor hall, not within our temple, but in a public hall. And Prabhupada's first reply was, are they going to pay something? And Sri Govinda visibly pulled back and said, but Prabhupada, you always taught us that we shouldn't charge money for receiving teachings. And then Prabhupada said, but in your country, if people receive something for nothing, they don't value it. But if they understand, oh, we have to pay something for this, then they'll value it. So then he repeated his question, will they pay something? So Sri Govinda said, well, I'm sure we can arrange it, Prabhupada, if that's what you want. He said, in your, he's repeated, in your country. It's like giving books. We give books. But we give books when we, you know, depends on the book distributor, but we understand when someone is genuinely sincere and they really want the book and they don't have anything for the book, we'll give them the book. We just have the commitment that you make a promise, please read it. Right, you've done that plenty of times probably. But it's good if some sacrifice. So anyway, when receiving the holy name, because that's chapter 2, is accepting of the holy name. So it's understood before we begin this chapter, we've heard what a valuable thing or commodity or what is it that we're being asked to receive. Please accept the holy name. So chapter 2, that's the little background. Chapter 2 begins with this title, Acceptance of the Holy Name. There's the Bengali term, Nama Grahana Vichar. And we heard that the painting here is, we heard this during Haridas Thakur's life. This is a lady who previously had a not very nice profession. She was a prostitute. In fact, she was the best amongst the prostitutes of a particular place. And she had been sent by a very envious person explicitly to get Haridas to fall down to disgrace him. So in the dead of night, nobody's around. She did her best to entice Haridas without the details of how she did that. And this went on for 3 evenings, and just hearing Haridas chanting, she became purified. She didn't chant, she just heard him chant. And she became purified. She confessed during the middle of the third night what her mission had been and who had sent her and everything. And Haridas replied, I knew from the very day that you had come that it was Ramchandra Khan who had sent you and what his purpose was, but I stayed just to deliver you. And she pleaded with him for forgiveness and requested to become his disciple. He had a condition. He said, you just give up this profession. In fact, the fruits of the profession, all the ornaments and fine jewelry and fine clothing, and just take all of that and give them away to others. Come here with one single cloth and I'll accept you. So she did that, and he gave her this cottage where he was staying, the tulsi plant to sit in front of, and she, following Haridas, became an ideal example of the chanter of the holy name. So one who has that potency, like Haridas, can give that potency to others. So Haridas wants to give to us that same fruit, devotional fruit. So acceptance of the holy name is the chapter. And it begins with Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the author. Glory to Lord Chaitanya, to Lord Gadadhar, to Lord Nityananda, the life of Janava Devi. Glory to Advaita, the husband of Sita. Glory to Shivas and all the devotees of the Lord. Here we see a painting of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur, and in the background there's the dome of the temple of Jagannath in Jagannath Puri. Because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had accepted sannyas and went to Puri, Haridas also wanted to come and be with him. But he was so humble, and that's the very next text, the qualification of Haridas that we heard from the very beginning and we're going to hear again and again. He had this qualification to constantly chant, in part because of his total humility. So in his humility, he didn't want to enter the temple of Jagannath. He wanted to see the dome of Jagannath from a distance, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made this arrangement, the little hillock within Puri, where he could stay in a little grass hut and see the dome of the temple of Jagannath and chant all day long, very, very peacefully. And so every day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come to visit Haridas. Because he wouldn't go to the temple, he came to see Haridas every day with prasad of Lord Jagannath. So, a theme, and you hear it in his language, and when you hear his language, think of what his heart is feeling. Great, great humility. Haridas wept with great love. With love, Lord Chaitanya embraced him. Lord Chaitanya said, where could you turn it a little bit more straight up, Nivedana? Somebody's phone is ringing. One of these phones up here. Not so far, yeah. Where is there another devotee like you? You know all the truths of spiritual life. You are always beyond the touch of Maya. Lord Chaitanya is saying this about Haridas. So these are qualities that Haridas has, that Lord Chaitanya is appreciating. Descending to this world, you took birth in a lowly family. In this way, you showed everyone that it is not by wealth, honor, noble family, or material virtues that one is able to meet Lord Krishna. Anyone who has great faith in pure devotional service is a saint. He is more exalted than the demigods. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's opinion. And appreciating Haridas has similar qualification. You know the truth of the holy name, the best of all truths. You are an ideal example of saintly conduct. You are an expert preacher. Speak, O Haridas, the limitless glories of the holy name. Hearing them from your mouth, I will feel bliss. Again, we're hearing some words of praise and appreciation by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about why Haridas is considered by him to be the acharya. Acharya is a Sanskrit word meaning teacher by example. The acharya for the holy name. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes on. There are three types of Vaishnavas who accept the holy name. So those three types, they go lower, middle, and upper. Very simple. So lower, anyone who once says the holy name purely is a Vaishnava. A householder should carefully honor him. And anyone from whose mouth one always hears the holy name of Lord Krishna purely chanted is a more exalted Vaishnava. He is the abode of all good qualities. Very important that qualities, good qualities, are decorations of one who always hears the holy name of Krishna purely chanted. Qualities follow good chanting. Then the third, simply by seeing one whose sight induces one to feel pure devotion to Lord Krishna, and who then finds Lord Krishna's holy name in one's mouth, That is the most exalted Vaishnava. And of course, Prabhupada is pictured here. These words, spoken by Lord Chaitanya, they're taken directly from Chaitanya Charitamrita, or more or less from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya is answering a question by some residents of Kulinagram who are in Puri going back to their home. Please tell us how to understand who is a Vaishnava. So there's these three gradations of Vaishnavas. Then Lord Chaitanya asks Haridas, how will the conditioned souls take up the chanting of Krishna's holy name? What is the arrange for that? Please tell me. So, acceptance of the holy name. What's Krishna's arrangement for conditioned souls to accept the holy name? He's come to deliver it. Haridas Thakur is the acharya for delivering. What's the method? What's the arrangement of Krishna? Folding his hands, Haridas began to speak, pushed by ecstatic love. His eyes were filled with tears and his voice was choked. He's in ecstasy, just being an instrument of Lord Chaitanya's message. So now comes this verse. We can recite it together. It's the verse from Padma Purana that the title of the book is taken from. Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnashuddho Nitya Mukto Abhinatvam Nama Namino. And here's the translation. The holy name of Krishna is transcendentally blissful. It bestows all spiritual benedictions, for it is Krishna himself, the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna's name is complete. And it is the form of all transcendental mellows. It is not a material name under any condition, and it is no less powerful than Krishna himself. Since Krishna's name is not contaminated by the material qualities, there is no question of its being involved with Maya. Krishna's name is always liberated and spiritual. It is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. This is because the name of Krishna and Krishna himself are identical. That's this last line here. Abhinatvam nama nomino. The name and the object named are abhina. They're not different. They're identical, in fact. So we recited this earlier. And I'm doing it again because it's the message that the whole book is based upon. The Chintamani, Nama Chintamani, the holy name has this very, very special quality. And we'll see in just a moment how Bhaktivinoda Thakur weaves this Chintamani into the text. Chintamani, we discussed, is eternal and transcendental touchstone. It can yield all that one can desire. It's better than a sparsha money. So the word sparsha in Sanskrit means touch, like mantra sparsha stukantaya satoshna sukha dukata. Sparsha means touch, or when the objects contact their object, when the senses contact their objects. So that's called, there's a touchstone, this sparshamani, this word. It's translated the same, but it's not the same, identically. Some of you know this story from Chaitanya Charitamrita, so nice to hear it even if you know it. Sanatan Goswami had a touchstone, a sparshamani. And he lived in Vrindavan. And also in Vrindavan, there was a poor brahmana. One narration Prabhupada spoke of says he was a Shaivite brahmana. And he heard that Sanatana Goswami had a touchstone. He was very poor. He thought, Sanatana Goswami is very kind. if I go and ask him for some brahminical charity, maybe he'll give me his touchstone and I won't have some financial problems anymore. So I went to Sanatan Goswami, spoke with him very nicely, and made his appeal for his touchstone, said, I heard you have a touchstone. May I ask for it in charity? And Sanatan Goswami said, sure. It's over there in the rubbish pile. And the man went over and found it in the rubbish pile. And, oh, thank you, thank you. And he went to his home and he had an iron pot and he touched a touchstone to the iron pot and turned to gold. So he went, you know, yay, lucky day. Then he found any other kinds of metal and touched the sparsha money to the base metal and turned to gold. So his financial difficulties were over because now he had this sparsha money. But then he was a brahmana, he thought, gee, this thing is so valuable. And he was keeping it over in the rubbish heap. It must mean that he has something more valuable. That was intelligent thinking. So he went back to where Sanatan Goswami was staying, and he said, "Do you have something more valuable? You're keeping this in the trash heap, and must mean you have something more valuable." He said, "Sure, I have something far more valuable." Really? Can I ask you for charity of that far more valuable thing? And Sanatan Goswami said, sure. But one condition. You take that sparsha money and go to the Jamuna River and throw it in the river. Means you'll never get it back. So the man looked at his touchstone and looked at it. He trusted Sanatan Goswami completely. So it was difficult because he was poor. And now he had something that gave him wealth, gold. But he trusted Sanatan and he threw it in the river. And then Sanatan gave him Chintamani. Nama Chintamani, the touchstone of the holy name, which gives far more than gold, that it gives anything that one can desire. So hopefully when you chant Hare Krishna mantra, you have, you know, desire for elevation of consciousness and desire for purification and yeah, we need lots of purification. So that's Chintamani. The holy name acts like Chintamani. And it's non-different than Krishna. Specifically, Krishna is a conscious person and the name is a conscious personality. That's what the meaning of this is, Chaitanya Vigraha. And eternally free from material imperfection. Nitya, mukta. Mukta means liberated or beyond material contamination. Nitya mukta, eternally in that position. So what happens if you contact that which is eternally perfect? You become purified, for sure. It's always situated in pure goodness, shuddha sattva. These are glories of the holy name. The holy name is identical or abhinna with the person who's denoted by the name. The name and the person named are the same, which isn't true with something material. You say a person's name or say an object's name. The classic that Prabhupada gave was water. You can say the sound, water, 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 water. The substance water and the sound vibration are different. That's material. Something that's spiritual, the sound and the object that is being addressed about by the sound, they're non-different. And the name of Krishna and Krishna are the same. And he descends to this world as the complete incarnation of the highest sweetness, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. So this is a breakdown of that very, very nice verse. This is the glories of, or the nature of, this holy name that we're hearing from Haridas about accepting. There's the Bengali in three verses of Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying the same thing as that verse. the indication I'm offering to you is Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not doing a creative writing spree. He's taking teachings from Chaitanya Charitamrita or from Padma Purana or scripture and placing them in simple language that people of his time in Bengal could hear and understand. So we're taking the same text and presenting in English. It's still relevant, although the language is not Bengali. He then, Haridas Thakur says, so the question again is, how can people accept this valuable gift? That's the question he's addressing. So then he says, any object is known by four characteristic features: name, form, qualities, and activities. Those of you that know the Sanskrit for this, nama, rupa, guna, lila, in sequence. So he's going to go through, they're sequential. Lord Krishna, the supreme object, there's Krishna receiving a devotee, Gopa Kumar, who's come back to him. Lord Krishna, the supreme object, is knowable in terms of his unlimited and eternal name, form, qualities, and pastimes. The absence of these four features in anything denies its status as an object. Now, where is that one going? What exists but doesn't have name, four qualities, and pastimes?
Brahman.
So those of you who've been around for a while, you know what Brahman is. Brahman is the effulgence of the Supreme Lord. So the effulgence, the jyoti, the light in the spiritual sky, is formless and without qualities and names and pastimes. So Haridas is very brilliantly stating it's not an object. It's a trait of Krishna. He has effulgence. But if you want to know Krishna, you have to go starting with Krishna's name. And Krishna exists eternally, so his name also exists eternally, free from any material taint. And he, Krishna, exists in these four features: name, form, qualities, and pastimes. These four features are manifest by his sandhini potency. For those of you that are little new, Sanskrit terminology can be confusing. Don't worry about it. The term means his potency of spiritual existence. In the spiritual world, there are various potencies. One of them is the potency of spiritual existence. That's his sandhini. It's one of Krishna's potencies. And he manifests himself, and he manifests the whole spiritual world, and all of his associates and all things by this sandhini potency. So the holy name has also this potency. Lord Krishna attracts everyone in all the worlds. The great treasure is that Krishna's name also has the same quality. That in fact, the very name Krishna, when you break it down, it's two syllables. Krish means to attract. So Krishna attracts because he's all attractive. He's the supreme attractive. And therefore this name, Krishna, means he attracts everyone. The person and the name also. Anyone who remembers Lord Krishna's name simultaneously meets or perceives Lord Krishna's form. We may not perceive Krishna's form because we may be covered, but we're meeting Krishna's form. And through purification, we can perceive Krishna's form through Krishna's name. Is it clear? It's not that there's something separate, the form of Krishna and then the name of Krishna. Rather, the form of Krishna is within that sound vibration. The form of Krishna becomes revealed to one who chants Krishna's name with proper attention. And then, they are, let's see, it's poetic. Lord Krishna's name and Krishna's form are also not different. They are Lord Krishna himself dancing in different dancing places. His name and his form. And they're like inseparable dancing partners. That's a nice meditation. When you're chanting Krishna's name. His form is there like a dancing partner with his name. They're inseparable. Very beautiful poetic description from one who has realized. Now, at the top we see a painting with Krishna in the middle. This is a painting of Krishna leaving. That's the Kura taking Krishna and Balaram and the gopis trying to stop Krishna from leaving. And that other of the Leela avatars of Krishna. Lord Krishna possesses 64 qualities manifest in him in limitless fullness. In his various incarnations, these qualities are manifested or manifest only partially. That's these other incarnations. So there's the sequence, the name, the form, then the qualities. So with the form, then he's going to lead us to these qualities, because they're also present in Krishna, they're present in Krishna's name. Limitless numbers of these qualities fill the spiritual world of Vaikuntha. Present everywhere on the waves of these qualities are Lord Krishna's pastimes. These perfectly and fully spiritual pastimes are manifested in Goloka, Vaikuntha, and Braja. And all of that becomes access to the name. That's the point. The holy name is the root of everything. Of these four, Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila, of these four ways you are to be known, your name is the primary element. The name is approached first, which then discloses the other three. So sometimes people ask when chanting, are you supposed to see a form of Krishna in your mind, or think of Krishna's pastimes while you're chanting Krishna's name or something like that? And you know, some people may do that. It's not like you're breaking some rule if you do that, but rather the teaching given by Haridas is just focus on the name, because through the name you can access everything. And in fact, the name discloses everything. And it's meant to be done like that. This is just chapter 2. We're just getting started. Very nice. Very nice teaching. We're getting instructions how to properly chant by the Acharya of the holy name. By your name, your form, qualities, and pastimes are made visible. By your name, your Krishna pastimes are known. By your name, the supreme truth about you is manifest. By your name alone, the Vaishnava Dharma is manifest. So if you're attracted to any one of these things, become absorbed in the name, chanting it properly. Now, again, this question asked of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri, who is a Vaishnava? Well, he's already said a person who's chanting purely, but there's persons that aren't yet chanting purely. So here's that category. A person who's chanting of your name in Namabhas, and we'll hear some more about Namabhas on Thursday, like a whole chapter is about Namabhas. But now he's just giving a little glimpse. Abhas means either commonly shadow or reflection. So like reflection. He's going to go into the shadow part, but reflection. So here's an object. Here's a bottle of water, and here's a mirror, and in the mirror is the image of the bottle of water. So in the mirror, there's no water. There's no substance. It looks like, but there's no substance. So similarly, when chants the holy name in this Namabhas stage, it's a reflection of the holy name. Or another example, maybe better example. If you're driving in your car and you look in your rear view mirror and you see the headlights of the car behind you, you're seeing the reflection of the headlights of the car behind you. There's not headlights in the mirror. It's a reflection. And the headlights are behind you, but you're seeing the reflection. It's bright. There's light. But it's a reflection of that light. And Namabhas is like that. It's a reflection, or a first faint light of the holy name. First faint light is like, you know, when the sun is rising, it's dark at night, and before you can see the sun directly on the horizon, you can see the light of the sun during that dawn period. That's the dawn period of the rising of the sun, the dawn period of the holy name. A first faint light of the holy name is Namabhas, and one who chants Namabhas, it can be translated, or it's translated here by the translator as almost Vaishnava or semi-Vaishnava or Vaishnava Praya. By the way, that's us for the most part, unless you happen to be, you know, very, very accomplished at chanting. This is where we are in this Namabhas stage. So, semi-Vaishnavas, aspiring, cultivating, becoming a Vaishnava. By Lord Krishna's mercy, good news for all of us, Krishna's merciful, that Vaishnava Praya person gradually becomes purified. This is Haridas teaching now. A conditioned soul may chant your name with faith, striving for purity. As he becomes purified, then he's Vaishnava. We still call, you know, the one who's becoming a Vaishnava is Vaishnava. Only the holy name and the living entities are spiritual. This is a teaching of Haridas. In this world, of course, there's also, you know, super soul. But the name and the living entities are spiritual, and all other things can be compared. And we shouldn't make the mistake of comparing the holy name to something material. Nothing is like the holy name in this world of birth and death. The holy name is the greatest treasure, the ultimate jewel in Lord Krishna's treasure house. That's very poetic, isn't it? Krishna he's rich. he has lots of jewels and valuable things in his treasure house, but the most valuable thing is the name. And we're being asked to accept it. In this world of birth and death, the individual souls and Lord Krishna's holy name alone are spiritual. All else is made of matter. So now, here's a nice image of teachings that Haridas speaks. The verses aren't listed, but he says there's two different kinds of names, primary and secondary. And the primary names, these are some examples, he says that the primary names are Krishna in his relationships with his devotees. Right in the text it says Yasoda Nandana or Nanda Nandana, Krishna and his mother, Krishna and his father, etc. So these are all examples of primary names. And primary names have a different effect than the secondary names. Secondary names are names that describe Krishna's position or post, like Lord or God or something like that in English. So these terms are all, you know, the Yageshwara, the Lord of Yajna, or Brahman, or, you know, something. All these different names. Paramatma. He's the Lord of the heart. Janardana. Yogeshwara. He's the Lord of all mystic powers, etc. That's his post. And then there's the person that occupies the post. Yes? You know, like the press, when they speak to somebody, you know, Mr. President. and they ask him some question. And then, you know, Mr. President, when he's at home, the dad, or, you know, honey or something from his wife. there's an expression of endearment because of the relationship. So his teaching, we're going to hear in just a moment, there's a different result brought about by the primary and secondary names. We'll hear first about the secondary names. They're found in karma, kanda, and jnana kanda portions of the Vedas. Well, what do? They bring piety in the karma kanda rituals, and they bring liberation in the jnana kanda portion of the Vedas. There's a fruit, piety, so that one can prosper materially, or freedom from material contact. The intention behind the name is also very important. But then the primary names bring pure love for Krishna. So we address Krishna in all of these different ways, but especially we cherish names that speak of him in a primary way. And by chanting of the holy name in its primary feature, then love for Krishna most readily awakens. This is a painting that a devotee artist I know made to illustrate a very nice verse from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 2. The other verse, Pravishta Karna Randrena Swanam Bhava Saroruham. She was illustrating. So when the sound of Krishna's name enters the ear, it falls upon the lotus of the heart, and the lotus of the heart then opens. The effect of chanting of the holy name is like that. So now this illustration is used to portray something that Haridas says about proper chanting compared to Namabhas chanting. Now, where this is going is the next chapter is about Namabhas chanting, and then after that is how to move Namabhas into pure. Very logical. So, again, the question is how are people to receive? Well, initially they don't receive purely, they receive in this other way. If the holy name once comes out of the mouth or once enters the pathway of the ears, whether its syllables are spoken purely or not, both souls, whether speaking or hearing the holy name, become delivered from material existence. That's the secondary result. Then here is overcoming Namabhas and attaining prema. It's a lot of steps, isn't it?
Is that the Great Wall?
No, this is a temple at the top. The temple. I believe. There's steps. The Great Wall is just a wall. However, one thing should be said about this. Chanting with Namabhas will bring its benefits slowly. It may take many lifetimes. Namabhas is certainly auspicious, but with Namabhas, chanting the great treasure of pure spiritual love takes birth only after a delay. By Namabhas chanting, sins are gradually destroyed, and the pure holy name gradually appears. Then the chanter attains pure love for Lord Krishna. Then he touches upon something that's very important, and it's going to be expanded further in further chapters, but this, the fault of distance or separation. There's the Sanskrit word, vyavadhana. Vyavadhana. If you don't like Sanskrit words, forget the Sanskrit word. It's the fault of separation because it says, abhinatvam nama namino. The name and the object named are different. But if one sees, well, Krishna is over there and the name Krishna is over there and they're separate, then that's a fault of vyavadhana or separation. To think that Lord Krishna is different from his holy name is the offense of separation, vyavadhana. As long as this idea of separation is present, there can be no pure love or prema. So it's a key to move from abhas chanting to pure chanting. So you can practice this. The practical application of these messages is the purpose. It's not just information. So we can move and receive and accept the gift that Lord Chaitanya wants to give. When chanting, try it tomorrow morning. Hearing the holy name, bringing your consciousness to the fact that the name and Krishna are none different. Prema becomes completely blocked by this extreme impurity or great distance from the pure holy name. It's like, you know, turning your stove on and putting the pot of water about 3 feet in the air above the flame. It's eventually going to get warm, but not the same as putting the pot right on the flame. Yes. The consciousness that we carry, touching our consciousness, try it when you're chanting tomorrow morning. Extend your consciousness to that sound vibration. Bring your consciousness in direct contact with the holy name. Something happens. It's different than just, you know, completing your prescribed rounds. So he goes on, Haridas, he's teaching about accepting the holy name. There's two types of this fault of separation. One is disruption of syllables, varna vyavadhana. And he gives some examples. Hatikari has in the beginning ha and in the end ri. So there's disruption of syllables. Or in Islam, there is haram. So these are examples of varna vyavadhana. Then there's tattva vyavadhana, or disruption of philosophical conclusion. This is like what Mayavadis do. This offense is much more serious. Krishna's name and Krishna himself are non-different. Someone who is polluted by Mayavad philosophy imagines them to be separate. Tattva vyavadhana. So for improving japa, Haridas Thakur is teaching us how we can improve our chanting. One should understand properly that the holy name is identical to Lord himself. The principal names of Krishna should be chanted as Shuddhanam, devoid of Namabhas, and the aparad or offense of Vyavadhana. We're going to go into this more on Thursday, but this is laying the ground. Very wonderful subject. I'll take that away. There's an image of Krishna, like, you know, with glass covering it, and by spraying the holy name. A nice graphic way of describing. We're cleansing the mirror of the heart so we can see Krishna properly by the chanting of the holy name. This vyavadhana. Tattva vyavadhana effect. There's the chanting, clearing that covering, separating Krishna from us. The soul must carefully serve a spiritual master with great attention. Only then can he leave Namabhas behind, Haridas Thakur teaches. The chanter will then be unable to separate himself from the stream of sweet nectar emanating from the holy name. Inside, he will dance constantly. But Haridas is being honey-like. He's holding out for the bees, the honey of going to the other side of imperfectly chanting the holy name to perfectly chanting the holy name. Then the devotee's devotional service is free from all unwanted things or anarthas. When the spiritual holy name dances on the devotee's tongue, then the devotee will never abandon the holy name, for it becomes to him like something of nectar. Can you move it? Food of nectar? Food? Mood of nectar? Something of nectar. Becomes like nectar. Intoxicated by drinking the nectar of the holy name, the
soul,
something, dances without stop. Then the holy name dances. The soul dances. It's a dance. Hare Krishna. Together they make the world dance, then Maya runs far away. We all know who that is, right? Ainder Prabhu. Some of you may not know, but you'd like to meet him after hearing this. He who has faith in the holy name is qualified to accept it. This is the theme. Of course, there's humility is also essential. Then some points up at the top. The name is endowed with all potencies. The name is offered to all as a means of deliverance. Chanting is every living entity's right. All we just have to do is accept it with faith and carry on attentively. In the holy name there are no obstacles. Could you tilt it the other way again? Consideration of the proper time or place of impurity or of rules and regulations or anything else have no bearing on chanting the holy name, for the holy name is very powerful. The holy name stands alone. Just like Krishna is fully independent, he stands alone. He's not dependent on anything. The holy name is not dependent on anything. If our faith goes to the holy name like that, and we chant in that mood, Haridas is encouraging us, everything will be delivered to us. There's this, to illustrate this, we'll go back. Yeah. The holy name is not dependent upon anything. So there's this very nice narration about a little boy named Gopal who was living at the same time as Lord Chaitanya. And there was a brahmana who was engaged in chanting. And the brahmana was seen scurrying towards the toilet, holding his tongue. And when the brahmana came back, he was asked, "Why were you holding your tongue?" He said, "Well, because it's not good to, my tongue just likes to chant, and it's not good to chant in the toilet because that's the name of Krishna is Krishna." And this little boy, Gopal, said, "What kind of Brahmin are you? Don't you know that Krishna cannot be contaminated by anything? Krishna can go anywhere and not be contaminated. What's wrong with you? What kind of Brahmin are you?" Little boy. And everyone went, "Wow." Lord Chaitanya said, "He is the true understander of the chanting of the holy name." He lived, those of you that go to Puri someday, may you be so fortunate to go to Puri, and you visit the place where Lord Chaitanya resided, called Gundicha. Excuse me, not Gundicha. Gambira. So to get to Gambira, you have to go past, it's like this big hall, and over to the left, just as you walk in, there's a little altar. And it's the altar where Gopal Guru worshipped his deity because he was given a place of residence. He became a very, very famous personality in Lord Chaitanya's followers, amongst Lord Chaitanya's followers, but because his age was very young after Lord Chaitanya, he isn't spoken about so much. But here's a reference. The holy name is not contaminated by anything or dependent upon anything. It purifies everything. We can chant in the bathroom. It's okay. Uh, in giving charity. The same is not true for karmakanda activities. In giving charity, performing yogis, performing ritual bath, and chanting japa of other mantras, many rules and regulations must be followed. However, in chanting Lord Krishna's holy name, faith alone makes one qualified to chant. Anyone, this is Haridas teaching, anyone who, with undeviating faith, takes shelter of chanting Lord Krishna's holy name, chanting that is the religion up for this age, attains everything. The souls in Kali Yuga should make Lord Krishna their whole world and always sincerely chant Lord Krishna's holy name. There's that painting again. In case you haven't seen it before, this was an actual portrait commissioned by the king of Orissa, Maharaj Pratap Rudra. He commissioned an artist to paint a portrait of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there's an artist's rendering of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's portrait. Very enchanting. So over here on the left side is Shikshastaka number 2, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says essentially the same thing that Haridas has said. There's no hard and fast rules for chanting the holy name. Then, we're almost done. There's a very important teaching about the chanting. Along, how do you live your life along with chanting the holy name? Well, you accept things that are favorable and reject things that are unfavorable for bhakti or for chanting the holy name. This is a nice set of paintings of the six Goswamis, Rupa and Sanatan here. And who is very famous for deity worship? Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And who is very famous for his writing? Jiva Goswami. Who is very famous for his speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam? Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. And who is very famous for his austerities and his habits of eating? Raghunath Das Goswami. So here's the six Goswamis. They live their lives in this way, accepting everything favorable, rejecting everything unfavorable, making Krishna one's whole world. One should pass this life always remembering Lord Krishna's holy name. That's what they did by example, and they gave wonderful teachings, both by their character and by their writings. Finally, one should not follow other religions or rituals. One should not worship anyone but Lord Krishna as the Supreme Lord, Haridas indicates. That, in other words, love is exclusive. And we may worship the forms of Nrisingadev or etc., etc. That's fine. But we understand them in relation to Krishna. One should always chant Lord Krishna's name and always serve his devotees in this way. One will certainly attain pure love for Lord Krishna. This is the end. Weeping, Haridas fell before Lord Chaitanya's feet, grasped them and begged for the gift of love for the holy name. When you go to Jagannath Puri, one of the places most likely you'll go is the place where Haridas Thakur was chanting every day. And this is the murti that's at that place, that Siddha Bakul in Puri. Final text. This, the Chintamani jewel of Lord Krishna's holy name has become the life of Bhakti Vinod, who always stays at Haridas Thakur's feet. In his final years, Bhakti Vinod Thakur made his residence in Puri. There was a house where he stayed. Actually, it was a very large facility, right near the samadhi of Haridas Thakur. And as years passed, that part of that facility was gifted to ISKCON to make a temple. So our ISKCON temple in Jagannath Puri is where Bhaktivinoda Thakur stayed. It's right across. You can't find it. Everyone knows where Haridasa's Samadhi is. It's right across the street from Haridasa's Samadhi. Just in that same vicinity. So, literally, Bhaktivinoda always stays at Haridasa Thakur's feet. It wasn't just, you know, a poetic expression. He lived his life that way. That's a photograph of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that ends chapter 2 of Harinam Chintamani. And this Thursday we'll be discussing chapter 3. And chapter 3 is expanding on the topic of Namabhas. What is it? The anatomy of Namabhas. The encouragement to go beyond Namabhas, and how to go beyond Namabhas is in the next chapters, overcoming the offenses against the chanting. It's a big topic. Actually, you could take several sessions to cover that topic. It's a very important topic. Very substantial. Anything? Any comments, questions? Mataji?
Yes, you mentioned genuinely chanting the holy name of Hare Krishna through transcendental.
What's the question?
I'm trying to remember what you were saying, but genuinely chanting the name of Hare Krishna by transcendental, is it thought? Like to connect with Krishna through the holy name?
Not thought. It's, we mentioned this. The soul is both conscious and consciousness. You've heard Prabhupada saying that before? And the example is, given as an example, there's fire, and fire has the quality of heat and light. In addition to fire having the quality of heat and light, the light goes elsewhere and can illumine other things at a distance. Light, heat and light, and it illumines other things. So similarly, the soul is conscious, and it extends consciousness, you know, through the body, and then through the senses of the body, we can hear sounds, or see sights that are at distance, or smell something. So consciousness extends. We're conscious and consciousness. That's the soul. So the advice is, extend your consciousness, because we're conscious, going to be conscious of something. We're making a sound vibration. Make sure that your consciousness is connected to the sound.
The sound of the holy name.
The sound of the holy name. Not the sound of the air conditioning unit. Or whatever that sound is. Rumbling of the subway underneath our feet, or whatever that sound is. There's so many sounds. So, and then the mind can go to so many places. And if we can do that one thing, it helps to get the full effect of purification. And we're going to hear Thursday, or whoever comes, about why we don't do that. You know, it's that inattentiveness, where the faculty of attention, the faculty of consciousness is a part of the things. It's built into us. Not just in this lifetime. Many, 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 many. We'll hear some more.
Thank you.
Gail.
Yeah, I have my usual few, but I'll start with one.
Looks like there's some others that have some questions too tonight.
Okay. That slide where we said that, you know, if a person simply either hears or speaks the holy name once, their material existence is finished. So I was thinking about, you know, people who have no inkling about Krishna, let's say bystanders at Bhakti.
Fine.
So their material life is finished.
Yeah. The message is same as. You're familiar with nectar devotion because you've studied with Dhanadhar Maharaj many times, nectar devotion. Those statements of aspects of devotional service, they have this potency, that potency. The potency is there. The potency is there. So somebody, you know, passes by the Harinam party in the subway or Union Square, wherever they are, they see Rath Yatra pass by. The potency is there, without exaggeration, to deliver them from material existence. A and B. They may be more covered, less covered. And B, they may, you know, continue on with their material activity and again become covered. Or be moved and, you know, the range of their material activity will be diminished. But for the potency is there to deliver them completely. Or us completely. Anyone completely. Even once. Then comes this thing of sadhana for us, because the potency is there for us, just chanting the name one. What to speak of these other people? Everyone. But the we're going to hear, the clouds and mist of ignorance and anarthas blocks the fullness of the sun of the holy name. The potency is there in the sun, but it's blocked. The anarthas and ignorance have the power to block the spiritual potency of the holy name. The potency is there in the holy name to deliver one from material existence. Then there's this other thing that we carry with us even before we, from our previous lifetimes and into this lifetime. We're born in ignorance. And we have tendencies that are averse to God. And then in various manifestations of aversion to God. Anartha. Tendency. So it's, you put those two things together, it's not an exaggeration. It's a fact. The potency is there. So for us, and for those people, they're encouraged to regularly chant the holy name, not just once. The potency is there in once, without exaggeration.
Yeah, so therefore, a person who hears the holy name
once,
might not be delivered from material existence, not because the potency is not there, but because they are so
covered. It's just like the Jhamila, as the classic scriptural example. It's not just that very last time when you saw the Yamadutas and he panicked and he called out like really intensely Narayana. All those other times he was calling his son's name Narayana. They were the same Namabhas. Mm-hmm. And Namabhas chanting has that potency. But the residual tendency from his past sinful activities carried over. The residual tendency carried over. And then again he's covered. One can go from the liberated to conditioned, the liberated conditioned position. When we're engaged in devotional service, we're in contact with the internal potency, and then we can disconnect with the internal potency and engage in material activity again. So, to what you're saying, an answer can be yes. And to what you're saying, the answer can be for that moment, they're liberated. And then again, the next moment covered. I mean, not even a second, just a fraction of a second. Because tendencies are very strong. We must acknowledge them. Not be afraid of them, just acknowledge them. And therefore, we need very strong spiritual practices to help counteract those other tendencies that we carry with us. The potency is there in the holy name to destroy them. Even once. Our stock is pretty big. Mm-hmm. And our attachment to them is pretty strong. Yes?
I may not articulate this so well.
But say it a little loud enough so the people in the back can hear.
Yes. Speaking of the aparad in which one understands the name of Krishna to be different from
yes,
Krishna,
I
was wondering, would it be correct to understand that the level that one can make that aparad can be at different levels.
So yes.
Theoretical.
Yes.
So one could theoretically understand mm-hmm. that, but then make the aparad because the realization is not there.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, one or zero. There's gradations. It's a dimmer switch. It's not an off and on switch. Good point.
And
similar to, you know, what she said.
Could I elaborate this to apply?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. So I was thinking, and then please let me know if this is right. Then for someone who has the theoretical understanding that the Holy Name is the same as Krishna, but doesn't realize it, that's demonstrated by one's chanting inattentively.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And say it the other way around. The difference between theoretical and realize is, at least with faith, we're striving, although our tendency for who knows how many lifetimes is otherwise, with faith, I've theoretically understood and I'm applying it with that kind of attentiveness. And still I'm being pushed by my tendencies. It's still that gradation thing. So the antidote...
Could someone turn that off, please?
Yeah, please.
Sorry about that.
A principal antidote to this aparad of separate seeing separately, vyavadhana, is consciousness. You know, applying conscious effort, you know, sincerely with faith to the practice of hearing the name of Krishna with the understanding that it's none different than Krishna. That takes practice. We can be, you know, 10% or, you know, like, you know, good, strong 50-60% for, you know, a couple of mantras.
Yeah.
You know, it can be, this. It's variant. So the effect, yes, the effect requires a steady effort over time. Sadhana. With conscious effort. We're on track. If we hear this message out of this whole thing that I'm doing, I'll be very happy. It's very, very important. Yeah.
So, I'm probably being too literal here, but if the name, Krishna's name, and Krishna are non-different, does that mean that the name has Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Leela? And if so, what does that even mean?
Well, the answer is yes. And what does it mean is just stay with, in practical and functional practical terms, mm-hmm. just stay with the name and everything will be revealed. Mm-hmm. So, what does that mean? Well, chant the holy name and in course of time, through purification, Krishna, that sound vibration, Krishna, the form of Krishna, will appear in your mind. Now what's that experience going to be like? You have to wait. But the form of Krishna, as consciousness touches the name, the form of Krishna will be revealed to you in your mind. And then Krishna may reveal himself beyond just your mind, like Dhruva was meditating on the form of Lord Vishnu, and his mind was attached to Vishnu. And then he appeared before him. And then his qualities, you know, like these two, his metaphor, his poetic metaphor is like two dancing partners, mm-hmm. the name and the form.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What, you know, two dancing partners? They're inseparable in different dancing places, in different dancing poses, the name and the form. That's just to give us a conceptual image, a poetic conceptual image, to carry us into that, you know, contemplation of that. So we don't need to think separately of the form. We think, just bring your consciousness properly to the name. And then we're the struggle that we have is not Krishna doesn't want to show us his name. It's already within the form. It's that we're distracted by all these other impressions. And the impressions, just if you like Sanskrit terms, the impressions are called samskaras. And I mentioned this on Saturday. A cluster of them is called vasana. Vasana means dress, like, you know, the dress of the soul. It's who we think we are. We're caught up in who we think we are instead of who we are. While we're trying to concentrate, bring our attention, our consciousness to Krishna, we're living in this other world. We're addicted to it, not habit. We're addicted to it. It's not who we are. So it keeps us from focusing on the name and Krishna revealing his form within the name. So what do? Sincerely, with faith, continue. Consciously extending our faculty of awareness, our attentiveness, chaita, that's now not pure, to Krishna, who will purify. And then Krishna will appear. Because he's already there. And then, as it's described, sequentially, within his name, within his form, there's all of his qualities. Because that's within his name too. So that's what our advanced, this is a very advanced stage of chanting. But that's what we're being encouraged to do. A similar description is found in this very long purport of Brahma Samhita, text 36, I think it is, where it speaks of mantra. No, that's not where it is. Mantra Upasana and Svara Sakhi. In the Svara Sakhi state, Jiva Goswami comments that there are still today people that can do this. They can enter into Krishna's pastimes. His eternal pastimes, just through mantra chanting. And then they can come back and tell us what, you know, what the pastimes were. The Rupa Goswami would write such literature. It wasn't imaginative. He was experiencing, was within, participating in the pastimes. So we're not there. We're at this, you know, just get, you know, get them, our faculty of awareness to go to the name. And, you know, the battle is all the samskaras and, you know, ignorance and tendencies for offense towards, you know, we'll hear into the next section, next chapter, three different categories. The devotee, the process of devotional service, and the name. Seeing those, we just heard, there's these two things that are spiritual in this world. The name and the soul. But the process of devotional service is also. To see those things that are actually spiritual as material, that's the ignorance that we're covered by. And it's a rebellious attitude toward Krishna that prevents us from entering into the chanting of the holy name properly. That's the battle. And, you know, it's a losing battle so far. So we need the mercy of Krishna. We need this strong spirit of submission to Krishna. And when Krishna sees that, he'll help. He's more than willing to help. We're not so willing. That the difficulty is on this side, not his side. So, to be continued on Thursday and so forth. Yeah. I saw her hand first and then you.
Yeah, you know, just last night on my way to the temple in Brooklyn, I stopped by my brother and he offered to drop me off to 125th Street, you know, for me to catch a train and continue on.
Okay.
Excuse me, my brother, he follows the Muslim religion, and every time when I try to bring up the name, to bring up
Krishna,
the ideas, and yeah, Krishna, he gets violently angry.
And
we get into arguments, but I try not to get into arguments. But yesterday, knowing how he is, and he was blasting music, I was chanting the name.
Singing. You're singing a melody.
Right. along with the music he was playing in the car. So I kind of like zapped him a little bit, I think. I think I zapped him a little bit there.
Okay.
And I'm trying to like...
penetrate.
Trying to subliminally drop it into his head somehow. Because he literally doesn't want to hear nothing else but this Muslim religion. And as soon as he opened up his mouth and said, well, no, it's supposed to be like the Muslim religion, this is the way you're supposed to meditate, this is the way you're supposed to do this and do that. Oh, Lord, I get the whole rigmarole of it. It's amazing. So, you know,
sounds like you've got an uphill battle.
It is. I try to chisel.
Cultivate inwardly. My advice is don't try to help your brother become a Krishna Bhakta, just like you've developed Krishna Bhakti, and subliminally help him, you know, give him some prasadam and things like that.
Yeah.
Sing Hare Krishna along with his music and things like that.
That's why I do.
Okay.
Maharaj, I have a question on Haridas Thakur.
You do?
In the beginning, we saw the prostitute.
Yeah.
So my question is, how did Haridas Thakur know that the prostitute was sent by Ramachandra Khan?
He's in touch with Supersoul. How do people know things that they don't directly experience with their eyes? There's a prompt from Supersoul. I mean, how else would he know? Yes?
If we do not reach this advanced stage of chanting...
If we do not reach this advanced stage of chanting...
It sounds like we won't.
No. Well, there's the Namabhas, and
just being honest.
Okay. But I'm also being honest that says... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says what happens if you don't. And your life will be protected, but you won't reach the full goal. Namna, Makari, Bahudani. So.
So, to finish my question, do we come back again and again until
you get an opportunity to engage in devotional service.
Meaning we come back.
Yeah, you come back. Yeah.
I see where she's coming from.
You get an opportunity to continue your devotional service in where you left off.
To come back to this miserable place.
Well, you know, it may be in some other place beside New York City. It might be in a heavenly planet, or might be, you know, who knows where. But you get an opportunity to continue your devotional service. In Bhagavad Gita, there's the option, there's these two primary options. Go to the heavenly planets, live a long duration of life of great opulence. When that piety bank account is spent, comes again to this human form of life, take a human birth. And then continue where you left off. Better, and option two, is take birth in a family of devotees, and from childhood, a whole other set of impressions from childhood, and then, you know, get a better start at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And continue, not go do this little detour program to the heavenly planets and come down again. It's preferred, according to the message of Bhagavad Gita. But if we don't complete, we get the sad part is we take birth again, but the good part is we continue where we left off. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've been around long enough to notice. There are some people that when they start Krishna consciousness, it seems like they go way up real fast. And then it kind of plateaus. It's because they're continuing where they left off in their previous life. And so our previous life may have been whatever it's been. And we go to wherever we go. And so now, you know, that the... What is it that we want? Question. What's important to me? What's the value of life that I hold? And, you know, one value of life is I don't want to take birth again. It's really a bad program. I want to change that program. So then, you know, but motivation by negation isn't the same as motivation by love. the motivation by love is what is to be aspired for. And if we take these teachings, to whatever degree we take this association that Haridas Thakur is extending to us, and by his association and his message and so forth, you just bump up a notch. It may not be, you know, perfection, but go further. Mm-hmm. And then maintain that. Try to maintain that. Mm-hmm. Yes, in the back.
Hello.
Hello. Your name is?
Isaac.
Isaac.
Yes, I'm new
here. Okay.
I have a simple question. Maybe a bit off topic, but by your definition and essence of understanding, what is love?
What is love? Well, the Sanskrit term is bhakti or prema bhakti, and love means seeing the interest of the object of love as what is all in all important to me, and let me engage in service or activities using my senses and my mind and my intelligence and my faculties for the happiness of the beloved. Practical activity with the purpose of pleasing the beloved. That's love. And then also it means receiving from the beloved with gratitude the acts of love that the object of love may be offering to us. That's also part of love. Mm-hmm. We got two hands up. Anyone else that has a question that hasn't asked one yet? Yes, in the back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Go ahead.
I was reading in one of the slides, it says that every jiva has the right to chant.
Every jiva has the right to chant. I like that one too.
How do we see in regard to responsibility to chant? And so right to chant is like we have right to walk on the street or we can take detour.
But, okay.
How do you contrast or see with the responsibility?
Well, it's just that's a nice question. First of all, it's a free will choice. The right is a free will choice. And then responsibility is exercise your free will property. I may have the right to do acts of kindness for others. Then there's the act of kindness for others, using my free will to do that. That's a life of responsibility. I have an option.
So even in responsibility, we are seeing like both ways, means whether to exercise or not.
Yes.
So in the right also we are seeing the same.
The responsibility means you do the right thing.
So once we understand...
The right means you have free will. Responsibility means you use it properly. At the end of the program, everyone that walks out the door gets $1 million. Then, okay, there's the right. Now, use it responsibly. Or otherwise.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yes.
With all due respect, I did not understand Namapasa properly. Would you mind repeating it?
Well, come on Thursday, because the whole topic is that. You had a question way in the back.
Yeah, Maharaj, can you give examples of Krishna's secondary names?
Krishna's secondary names?
Yeah.
That's your question?
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the slide. I mean, there's a whole sheet full of them. Keep going. There. Okay. So, here's one that's there twice. Yogeshwara. Paramatma, Ishvara. Brahman, Yogeshwara. Okay. Good? That's the post. Then there's a person that occupies the post. It's like, you know, Paramatma. So there's Paramatma several times in this collage. So who was Dhruva meditating upon? Paramatma. And he fixed his mind on Paramatma. And he was so... But his teacher was Narada Muni. And he became so fixed upon Paramatma that Paramatma disappeared from his heart and was standing in front of him. In person. And he talked to him and Dhruva talked to him back. And they had a person-to-person exchange. So the Paramatma feature suddenly became Bhagavan. You follow? The person. Not just the post. Dhruva wanted to say some nice words, but he hadn't gone to school yet. He didn't know how to say nice words. So Lord Vishnu touched him with his conch shell and he was able to say nice words. That's Bhagavan. He has all potencies. And he extends himself in very personal ways. So it's the same entity manifesting either Paramatma feature, the post, or the person. Okay? We have one question up here and then we're going to end because it's a weekday night. We have to do other things tomorrow.
Maharaj, on the same topic, Hara is a secondary name?
That's in the... I didn't make that chart, by the way. Well, Hari is not there. I don't know why Hara is there. It's there several times. Can't say. So, one final thing. You have something?
Yes.
Yeah.
My name is Mari, and I'm new here.
Yeah, I figured that out. I saw you walking in with your Bhagavad Gita, and so someone politely asked you to sit down.
Yeah, well, I was in Times Square.
Okay.
And so, it's a big question, but it's, I guess, something I would like more people to, like, start thinking about.
Okay.
So, I was raised Christian.
Me too.
And ever since high school, I've been exploring different religions.
Me too.
And so, I'm just wondering, how do we start a conversation about the idea of different faiths and how to transcend the division of faith?
Got it.
And start a conversation about just being one, no matter what.
Got it.
No matter which faith you worship in, as she mentioned earlier.
Well, ecumenism is the term that's used where we respect other faiths and we try to see the essences within the many faiths, and that's the basis of that respect for many faiths. Another approach that gets you to the same place is to understand the science of transcendence, the science of God. The Sanskrit term is tattva, Krishna tattva, the truth about transcendence, the truth about the Supreme Person. And Bhagavad Gita, the book that I saw you walking in with, that's its intention, is to not to say thisism versus thatism, but speak of principles. And when you become familiar with those principles that are like the essences or the building blocks of whatever the religion, They just take, you know, some from over, some blocks from over here and some blocks from over there, and that it, it's, that the anatomy is based upon those principles. It's another approach besides ecumenism of just like, you know, shoulder to shoulder and trying to appreciate and respect one another. Although there's differences in rituals, there's similarities in essences. A whole other approach is just, if there is such a thing, and I'm suggesting the Bhagavad Gita is such a thing, it, read it not as persuasion to give up that ism and take this ism. It's describing essences. And as you become familiar with Bhagavad Gita, then you can understand and appreciate, you know, what's valuable in other religions. Why they're valuable is this essence is there and that essence is there. Because you have a text that teaches what those essences are, the building blocks. Use that either metaphor. One other little thing, and then that I am going to end. I spent some time Sunday morning. We have those people that you saw at Times Square giving out, you know, chanting and books. So they have a place where they live together in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn. I was there on Sunday, spent a little time with a person that kind of like the shelter-giving village elder kind of personality that looks after the place. And he was sharing with me a question that one of the young men living there asked him. What did he think of spending time learning about interfaith dialogue? And he shared with him, he shared with me what he shared with him. And he pulled off his shelf a book where a person from Rutgers University was kind of like the American-born scholar that people involved in these kinds of interfaith dialogues. And then he was asked to, you know, lead one. And he said, you know what? I'll take part in this if we can change the purpose from religious tolerance to religious respect. No one replied. Because they're willing to tolerate, but not respect. And these are leaders of religions that want to promote interfaith. I'm not saying that's you, but, you know, your interest is the same as this person who wrote the book. And he was like, you know, way up there in the field of interfaith, which he thought was, when getting into it, was, let us respect one another by understanding the similarities. And it wasn't. It was like, let's learn to tolerate each other and not bash each other in war and verbal, you know, combat. It's a tough row to hoe. Using an old English term. So my experience from the years when I was doing exactly what you were doing, that you are doing, I found where to find that position of respect in persons that understand the essences is very similar to what this gentleman that's a professor at Rutgers University. It, you know, when you get up in that lofty realm, it's not respect. It's tolerance. And so, rather, I'm advocating, at least this worked for me, a text that shows principles. It's not advocating. You read it carefully. It's not saying, you know, give up that ism and take this ism because this ism is better than that ism. It's not that kind of thing. Which commonly goes on. You know, it's just giving principles. Go into it carefully, you know, cautiously, but don't. And see if it does that. And then you have the key that opens a number of doors. At least then in your heart you can have respect for differences, because of appreciation for the essences.
Not just tolerance.
Yeah, not just tolerance. Okay, so we're going to end. In something that I did on Friday is I gave out a sheet, a printed sheet, and I have some more. For those that didn't get one, I'm going to walk around and give out those sheets. It's little meditations on the name. And my encouragement was, and again it is, before you do your chanting of Krishna's holy name, tomorrow and the next day and the next day and thereafter, take on as a little practice after you get up in the morning and you take your bath and put on some clean, fresh clothes and you're ready to absorb yourself in the sound of God's holy name. First read some of these and absorb yourself in a meditative mood for the purpose of opening your heart to receive the holy name. It's the same as this chapter, accepting the holy name. And see what happens. See if there's a qualitative improvement in how you engage yourself with the sound of Krishna's holy name. I'm going to walk around and cast those out while we have one final kirtan. And